At noon on KSFR looks at today's top local news headlines for this Friday, June 28th. Afternoon temperatures soared in Santa Fe on Thursday. Meteorologist Chuck Jones with the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque says it was indeed notable.
For only the second time at the Santa Fe airport, temperature reached 100 degrees, and in fact it was 102 on Thursday, and that is an all-time record high at the airport.
Meanwhile, electric utility PNM says customers set new peaks for usage Thursday, using 2,008 megawatts. That's compared to the record of 1,973 set back in 2010. Meanwhile, the heat will begin to abate today. We'll have more details in the weather forecast in just a moment. Still no containment to report in the nearby 10,100-acre Horoso fire burning in the Pecos Wilderness. The latest reports say that fire activity that had appeared to be approaching the headwaters of the Pecos River diminished on Thursday, with greater activity instead observed on the fire's northeastern flank. Some 132 personnel are currently assigned to the blaze, which is burning in difficult terrain not suitable for ground crews. State Representative Brian Egoff of Santa Fe, an attorney by trade, has asked the state Supreme Court to consider the question of same-sex marriage here in our state. Egoff represents Alex Hanna and Jan Hudson, who were recently denied a marriage license by the Santa Fe County Clerk's Office. The case was originally filed with a lower state court, but after Wednesday's same-sex marriage rulings by the U.S. Supreme Court, was refiled Thursday as a matter of great public concern. A decision by New Mexico's High Court to hear the matter should be made within weeks. The office of Mayor of Santa Fe could, in coming years, hold more power. Santa Fe's Charter Review Commission has endorsed changes that include giving the mayor the right to cast a vote along with city council. At present, that's only permissible when the governing body is deadlocked. Another change would give the mayor more hiring and firing powers. Additionally, the post would become full-time and not allow for the individual to hold another concurrent job. The proposals will now go to City Council, who could ultimately put them before city voters for approval. Governor Susana Martinez has unveiled a new central location for New Mexicans to see sex offender information statewide, including real-time email notifications when an offender moves into local communities. This comes ahead of a new sex offender law that goes into effect Monday, July 1st. It requires that any out-of-state sex offenders who were required to register in the state they're moving from to register as a sex offender here in New Mexico. They also have to disclose their vehicle and license plate information and any aliases used on social networking sites. More details can be found at nmsexoffender.com. New Mexico Attorney General Gary King has today announced updated guidelines for his office's attorneys who want to provide free legal help to people who cannot afford lawyers. He says pro bono work for New Mexicans of limited means is not only a duty but a privilege. Assistant attorneys general are limited to free legal services that are civil in nature and not part of criminal defense. Among permissible types of services are representation and advice to nonprofit organizations that provide services to persons of limited means, such as homeless shelters and food pantries. The UNM Health Sciences Center is inviting Hispanic families living with cerebral cavernous malformation, or CCM for short, to attend a meeting Saturday to learn of recent advances in the treatment of the condition. CCM are collections of enlarged or irregular capillaries in the brain with abnormally thin walls, and people of Hispanic descent show a greater inclination to the condition. It can cause seizures and premature death. Transmission of the gene has been linked back to early Spanish settlers who arrived in what is now New Mexico in the late 1500s. That meeting begins at 9 a.m. tomorrow in Albuquerque at UNM's Domenici Building. The New Mexico Department of Health says that tularemia cases are on the increase in several locations around our state. Recent human cases include two people from Santa Fe County who have since recovered. There have also been a number of cases reported in pet dogs and cats. Tularemia is a bacterial illness often contracted by contact with rodents and rabbits or pets that have been themselves sickened. Initial symptoms mirror those of plague, such as sudden fever, chills, headaches, and muscle and joint pain. It's easily treated with antibiotics, but without care, can prove fatal in a small number of cases. and weather for Santa Fe. Our record heat slowly begins to back off today, though highs will still be in the mid-90s. Moisture will be on the increase, with a 10% chance for isolated afternoon and evening showers today. That increases to a 30% chance tomorrow and 50% by Sunday. Decent chances for rain continue into next week. Daytime highs will fall back to the mid-80s by Sunday. At noon on KSFR, we'll continue with today's feature stories in just a moment.
Ebullient mezzo-soprano Susan Graham performs a title role of Jacques Offenbach's riotously funny The Grand Duchess of Gerolstein this summer at the Santa Fe Opera. All's fair in love and war games at the Gerolstein Military Academy, with its dashing uniformed cadets and apple-cheeked local sweethearts cheering them on, with the Academy's patroness, the Grand Duchess herself, in sexy pursuit. Far from being a lady of a certain age, this Grand Duchess is an amorous aristocrat with an eye for Fritz, her favorite young cadet, sung by the dynamic American tenor Paul Appleby. Soprano Anya Matanovic completes the love triangle. Emmanuel Viom conducts. The Santa Fe Opera's Grand Duchess of Gerolstein promises lots of laughter and fun. Learn more about this production and the entire upcoming season by visiting santafeopera.com or by calling 800-280-4654. That's 800-280-4654. This message is sponsored by the Santa Fe Opera, a tax-exempt organization.
And moving on now to today's feature stories here at noon. As we head deeper into the hot summer months, concerns about the availability of an adequate water supply increase. New Mexico has always been an arid state, but now, as we head into our third year of drought, the situation is worse. One concern in Santa Fe has to do with the combination of low flow in the Rio Grande and depleted reserves. Rick Carpenter is the Water Resources and Conservation Manager for the City Water Division. He joins us now. Rick, we've heard reports that it's going to be necessary to start taking water from our reservoirs to maintain water pressure in town. Is that true?
Well, I wouldn't look at it quite like that. Beginning over the weekend at some point, we expect flows in the Rio Grande to become quite low because calls for imported San Juan Chama water from Albuquerque and MRGCD will cease. And so there will be very little flows in the river other than native flows and maybe a little bit of water from some of the other smaller contractors. And so at that point, it may become necessary or it may not become necessary to start drawing from the Upper Canyon reservoirs on the Santa Fe River.
This is being necessitated because of a decreased flow in the Rio Grande, which affects the Buckman Diversion Project, yes?
Yeah, there's a physical impediment to diverting water when it gets below about 300 cubic feet per second in the river. There are also some permit constraints that require the project to curtail diversions along a linear scale beginning at 325 cubic feet per second in the river.
How significantly has the drought lowered the amount of water in the reservoirs?
Right now, the reservoirs are at about 33 or 32% of total capacity, and that's lower than we would like to see this time of year. But the good news is we have been saving or banking what little water there is in those reservoirs for use during the high-demand summer months. So we believe we can draw maybe 3 or 4 million gallons per day from those reservoirs through the hotter months of the summer to supplement other supply sources.
Is Santa Fe in danger of running out of water in the near future?
Well, we always keep a close look, of course, on the ratio of supply to demand, and we emphasize conservation, especially during these hotter months. But right now, we're able to meet demand.
Albuquerque is going to be using well water. Is that a possibility here in Santa Fe?
Yes, it is. Santa Fe is very fortunate that we've planned well and invested in our infrastructure such that we have four distinct supply sources, two of which are our well fields, one well field in the city, and then there's the Buckman well field. And we've been resting the Buckman well field for the last 2.5 years, ever since the Buckman Direct Diversion, which is a surface supply project, came online. So those well fields have been rested, and they will be ready to go should we need them.
And what can we do to help maintain an adequate water supply?
Well, I think certainly a heightened awareness that we are in a pretty severe drought. We're in the third consecutive year of extreme drought, and that's pretty unprecedented. So a heightened awareness, I think. And then just maintaining compliance with conservation objectives, primarily then time of day restrictions and things like that. And we'll be very proactive in working with our water customers and getting through the summer and letting them know what the status is and how we can deal with that.
Rick Carpenter, Water Resources and Conservation Manager for the City of Santa Fe. Many thanks for joining us here today at noon on KSFR. 15 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Scientists at the Los Alamos National Laboratory have helped to develop a new lightweight portable device for taking X-rays. We're joined now by Scott Watson, who is with the lab and part of the team who developed the imaging system. Scott, tell us about it.
Well, it's we call it Minimax, and basically what it is a modification of existing technology that people call storage phosphors, which allows us to develop a phosphor, which is like a film, but we develop it with light instead of with chemicals. And so it allows you to take X-rays without using film chemistry, and it also allows you to make a very lightweight scanner to do that.
Is the primary use for this device as a security tool?
Yeah, the primary application is to inspect suspicious cargo.
What's the price for one of the units?
The price for the components is in the neighborhood of $20,000. That compares with similar systems which might cost $50,000 or $100,000. The laboratory is actually working right now to get a corporate partner to manufacture these because obviously the laboratory doesn't manufacture things like that. So that's in progress right now. One of the main things about our particular system is that it's relatively low cost compared to other systems, and it's also lightweight, so small post offices might be able to use it or small airports.
Could this device be used for medical purposes?
Potentially. FDA approval is a very difficult, sort of expensive process, but one potential application would be in disaster relief. Because it's so small and it's battery-operated and it can take hundreds of radiographs, you can imagine a situation like in the Hurricane Haiti where you know, maybe thousands of people were injured and you couldn't readily get those people either to a hospital or an X-ray machine to them. Something like this would have a good application, I think, for disaster relief. So we've been talking with Doctors Without Borders and the Bill Gates Foundation, organizations like that, in an attempt to try to get that on, you know, used in disaster.
In addition to security and medical uses, are there other potential uses for the technology?
Well, sure. Really, any area where people take a radiograph today would be useful with this system. Believe it or not, nowadays there's a lot of artists that do radiography. They take radiographs of seashells and things like that. And X-ray radiography has actually become a little bit of an art form. So this would put it in a perhaps price range that an artist could readily afford without mortgaging their house. And obviously inspection technology is important. People that do industrial inspection for parts and that kind of thing could potentially use this system. And obviously, anytime you want to inspect a container, either for clandestine material or just to verify the material that's in there. For example, we're going to the International Atomic Energy Agency next week to discuss that possibility with them.
And can you send an image from this device to a computer?
Yes, that's exactly right. Because it takes a digital image, you can imagine if you had, say, a ski hill accident where you couldn't readily move the person, you could take an X-ray of a broken bone right on the mountain, transmit that via telephone to a hospital, and a doctor could evaluate that condition remotely. And the system that could do that weighs less than 10 pounds and fits in a small satchel.
Anything else you'd like us to know?
Well, one of the things we're sort of highlighting in our discussions is lightweight X-ray sources, too. And we have been collaborating with several companies to make such sources. One of those companies is Golden Engineering in Centerville, Illinois. And another company is Tribogenics, who makes a different type of X-ray source in California, in Los Angeles.
Scott Watson with the Los Alamos National Laboratory. Many thanks for joining us today. 19 minutes past the hour as At Noon on KSFR continues. For some time, the Alexander technique has been used to educate people on energy-conserving movements. This summer in Santa Fe, the public will have a chance to learn about the technique. Here is KSFR news reporter Charles Maynard with the story.
In the late 1800s, a new movement technique was described by actor Frederick Matthias Alexander. He named it What else? The Alexander technique. Now, more than 100 years later, it's still a widely used process. Marta Curbelo is an Alexander technique teacher in Santa Fe.
The Alexander technique, it's a re-educational process, and it teaches you how to use yourself in a more efficient way. And you can learn how to create new habits to replace the ones that possibly are causing you pain or bad posture, poor balance, fatigue. And as you release the excess muscle tension, and it seems that we all carry that around, you can learn to use only what you need, and you therefore move more easily. Really, the Alexander technique is for everybody and whatever age you are, but in my practice, I really see a lot of people with back pain and, you know, using computers, not knowing how to use them properly. And also I've worked with Parkinson's, I've worked with people with MS, and just people that would like, quote, better posture, or people with injuries. So it could be at any age, at whatever you do, it really helps you just in general in your life.
As mentioned, Alexander was an actor, and the technique is still a popular tool amongst actors.
I worked at Juilliard for a year. It's in the acting department, but it's also in the music department. It's in a lot of universities for acting and for musicians. I have a number of musicians, especially violinists or pianists, just any musician, anybody who overworks, who uses more tension than they need. Actors, because their instrument, well, everybody's instrument is their bodies, but they're specifically, it's their profession, want to be able to move more easily or get into configurations that are difficult without pain and get out of it. I worked with an actor who did The Elephant Man, and he was in this horrible configuration, and I helped him get into it and out of it without pain.
Ms. Curbelo will be offering classes in the movement style at the Genoveva Chavez Community Center.
There are two classes, one at 12:30 to 1:45, and one at 2 to 3:15, and it runs from July 1st on Mondays, from July 1st, four consecutive Mondays to the 22nd. I've taught last summer, last winter, and now this is the third time that I've run these classes.
More information is available on the public classes.
Go to Chavez, and the front desk will give you information there about how many people have already registered, because I have limited to 10. I've done this before, and there have been too many people, so I've limited it to 10 people. I think it's better for my students. I also teach from my home studio in Santa Fe.
Marta Curbelo.
Everyone can be helped. I know that sounds very, very large scope of activity, but anybody can benefit from this. I had an elderly woman in one of my classes. She had trouble bending, and she started coming to private lessons, and then she was able to bend properly.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
Santa Fe psychologist Dr. Penelope Penland is pleased to help present KSFR programming. Dr. Penland's diverse practice fosters the emergence of each person's authentic self in all domains of life. Like KSFR, she strives for thoughtful and independent inquiry to foster individual freedom and responsibility in the context of community. Dr. Penelope Penland, 983-3990.
Support comes from Naropa University, with degrees in the expressive arts including art therapy, dance therapy, body psychotherapy, wilderness therapy, and more. Learn more online at naropa.edu.
Currently 84 degrees in Santa Fe at 24 minutes past the hour. That's considerably cooler than it was this time yesterday. Thursday saw Santa Fe set a new record for highest temperature ever recorded in the city. The Santa Fe airport hit a high of 102. And though it is still hot today, temperatures will begin to decline in coming days. June is set to close as yet another month wherein precipitation totals are far below statistical norms, but there is hope on the horizon. Meteorologist Chuck Jones with the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque joins us now. Chuck, we're tipping into a weather pattern you and your colleagues are referring to as a reverse monsoon. Explain that for us.
Well, temperatures will come down slowly, and moisture will be on the increase across all of New Mexico, and of course that includes the Santa Fe metro area. And we're looking at a series of backdoor cold fronts aided by outflows from thunderstorms that will bring moisture into the area from the east and north rather than from the south that we might typically see this time of year with the onset of the monsoon. We term this sometimes the reverse monsoon, where moisture comes from the north and east rather than from the south or southwest.
And your expectation is that with these higher precipitation probabilities in the forecast, Santa Fe and other regions will actually be receiving some wetting rainfall?
Most of the state will eventually get wetting precipitation. It'll be confined to mainly eastern areas today and portions of central New Mexico. But that moisture will be working its way westward slowly, and much of the state should see rainfall and probably wetting rains by late in the weekend and especially early next week.
Chuck, by necessity, we've spent a lot of recent weather talk time focusing on our persistent drought. Is 2013 on track to go down as one of the driest years ever for our state?
Well, right now we're ranked around 12th driest for the year through the first half of the year. So certainly it's going to be a dry year, but perhaps not record-breaking. At least at this point, it does not look that way.
And of our summer monsoon that typically starts in July, are you seeing any of the classic atmospheric signatures that indicate the phenomenon is setting up?
Not quite yet, although we do see daily rounds of thunderstorms down over Mexico. It's just a matter of getting that moisture to advect northward. And with the high pressure to our west and the general flow from north to south, that's not going to be the case probably over the next week or so.
One of the key indicators for the monsoon is a large high that parks over Texas, yes?
Yes, if we get a high pressure over Texas or the Gulf of Mexico, that's the best case scenario for us to bring a good surge of moisture northward from Mexico into New Mexico.
And that pocket of extreme heat that's been over us, though that exits our state, it's going to still be in evidence and points to our west. Tell us about that.
The high-pressure area will actually be building over the next couple of days, and much of the western part of the U.S., even up into the Pacific Northwest, will be getting very hot and perhaps record-breaking heat in places like Las Vegas, Nevada.
Meteorologist Chuck Jones with the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque. Many thanks for joining us here at noon, which will continue in just a moment.
Support for programming on KSFR is underwritten in part by LAM, Los Alamos County Airport, a tax-exempt organization now offering three flights a day to and from Albuquerque International, coordinated with the most popular daily flights. Start your journey at LAM. More information at flylosalamos.com.
12:28 here at KSFR, and as we approach the bottom of the hour, it is our custom to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
Sometimes I wonder what a being from another planet would think of us if we sat him or her or it in front of a television and let them watch a few hours of American TV programming, that's assuming an understanding of our language, at least on the level of a local gang member. Any member, any gang, I don't think it really makes a difference. But what would that extraterrestrial think of us after watching television? I'm pretty sure that one question that would cross the alien's mind is who builds our buildings? Where do we find the people who can properly put together our houses and skyscrapers, especially since, the ET would think, erectile dysfunction is so rampant? Imagine the ET. Excuse me, what? Erectile dysfunction has nothing to do with erecting buildings? What does it have to do with? Really? Well, there go all my construction jokes. Or not. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk. With many thanks to my contributing colleague today, Charles Maynard.